A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll hear from cellist Stephen Isserlis, who has revisited Robert Schumann's collection of advice for young musicians in his own book that was recently published in the U.S. I'll speak with him about what thoughts he hoped to convey to the next generation of musicians and some of the other children's books about music that he's written. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Charles Dutoit is the latest conductor whose legacy may be undone by allegations of sexual misconduct, as several orchestras revoked his titles or replaced him in upcoming programs after several women came forward to recount stories of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior. The Philadelphia Orchestra, where Dutoit served as chief conductor and artistic advisor from 2008 to 2012, said Friday it had stripped him of his title of conductor laureate in the wake of the allegations and encouraged those who might have faced inappropriate behavior from him to come forward. The San Francisco Symphony on Thursday said that it had severed all ties with Dutoit and would replace him in his scheduled April appearances. The announcements followed a report by the Associated Press that four women, including retired mezzo-soprano Paula Rasmussen, described incidents of sexual misconduct by the Swiss conductor. According to the New York Times, some of the other orchestras that have said they will no longer work with Dutoit include the Boston Symphony Orchestra, the New York Philharmonic, and the Chicago Symphony. Earlier this month, longtime Metropolitan Opera music director James Levine became one of the first major figures in the classical music world to face allegations of sexual misconduct, as the topic has gained awareness and spawned public discussion and outcry in recent weeks. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. When you play, don't worry about who may be listening. Nothing great can be achieved in art without enthusiasm. And never miss good operas. These were just three of the 70 or so pearls of wisdom written down by Robert Schumann in 1848 and published 2 years later in his Advice to Young Musicians. Certainly many of them ring true today to music lovers, old and young alike. But times have changed. And that prompted cellist Stephen Isserlis to bring a new version of the small book to our next generation of musicians. His work revisits Schumann's list of advice with an updated translation and some commentary, as well as some of his own thoughts that might inspire young musicians or any music lover in today's fast-paced media and YouTube-driven society. You just heard an excerpt from a performance by Isserles of Schumann's Fairy Tale Pictures, along with clarinetist Michael Collins and pianist Stephen Huff. Isserles' book was recently published in the U.S. by the University of Chicago Press, and I spoke with him about how he approached his task and what today's young artists might take away from it.
Well, he was always very interested in education and young people, and he wrote, I think he started writing for his children, really, several children. He started writing little pieces for them and arranging famous pieces by the great masters for them. And then he wrote this advice for young musicians to go with the pieces he'd written, which, of course, are famous now as Album for the Young, his original pieces. And, so he wrote this sort of these wise words for the youngsters. And in fact, they didn't come out with Album for the Young, but that was his original plan. The advice came out later, because Album for the Young is probably the most famous of all children's piano pieces, much beloved. The words are not so famous, but German young musicians, I think, have generally read them.
And when did you first encounter the book?
Ooh, when I was a young musician, I think. I don't know. I think I probably read them as a teenager, or dipped into them. Yeah. I mean, they're quite dippable into the little sound bites, really.
And then how did this idea develop then to take this and expand it and maybe kind of open it up to a whole new generation of young musicians?
Well, I've had a lot to do with young musicians over the years because I run a seminar in Cornwall, in Prussia Cove in Cornwall, IMS Prussia Cove, and I was touring with Asian Youth Orchestra. I think that's really what started me off on it, because I was asked what advice I'd give the members, the lovely members of this young orchestra at the end of the tour for a documentary. And I started talking about it, and I wrote something about it for my official sort of Facebook page. And I was amazed by the response. And sort of having loved these Schumann words for so long, I sort of put the two together. But if I could sort of produce a book based on his, that young musicians might like it. It might be useful to them.
What were some of the challenges that you found in approaching this work?
Yeah, well, it was sort of a challenge because Schumann is writing for a young aesthete, I think, that isn't much around today. Maybe a few, but I wouldn't say they were the majority. And also the translation of Schumann's book that I had was very sort of out of date. The language was very quaint. So first of all, I wanted to put Schumann's words into more accessible language. And then I wanted to make his ideas, which, I mean, the core of his truth, absolutely as valid today as they were then. But I wanted to sort of make it more easy for today's generation to understand, today's young musicians who, you know, are very influenced by YouTube and Facebook and whatever, recordings. Of course, Schumann had none of this. So I wanted to just bring his ideals to them, but without being in any way pompous or irrelevant. That was the challenge I had.
Now, in addition to kind of tweaking the translation, you also regroup them a little bit, and then you add your own commentary as far as, you know, maybe interpreting. Well, tell us a little bit about how you approached that.
Well, it was just, I suppose, ideas that Schumann hadn't sort of mentioned, and some of them, of course, just weren't relevant in his time, and they're relevant today. So a few ideas of my own, a few hobby horses I have, a few bees in my bonnet, whatever. I remember one of my, I guess I can't remember what I wrote about, but I remember that one of them was about tuning on stage, when people tune their instruments before they start to play. It drives me crazy, because it ruins the whole magic of a opening of the piece, as far as I'm concerned. So things like that, and then just ideas I have that have come up very often in masterclasses or whatever, or talking to young musicians. And then I put a very few of Schumann's ideas at the end, his paragraphs at the end, which I didn't think were relevant anymore. But I still wanted them in there because they're by Schumann, and every word by Schumann is worth reading. But I didn't think they were for general consumption these days. So that's why they went in an appendix. But it was a fun thing to do. Because first of all, because I love working with young musicians. My previous two books are for children about music. And I love working with children as well. So that, those are also fun. But they were quite hard work. I had to do a lot of research for them. Whereas this, I didn't have to do any research, really. So it was easier. And it's shorter. It's quite a slim little volume. But it feels quite nice. It doesn't quite fit in your pocket, but it's handy.
Now, was there any kind of sense of, maybe not awe, but, you know, just did anyone ask, well, wait, this is Schumann, you know, are you trying to upstage? Or what was that like approaching the work of someone who historically, you know, has such a reputation, you know, bringing it to today's readers and putting your own stamp on it?
Well, certainly nobody really asked that. I have a feeling that in a past life, I was one of Schumann's hangers-on. Sort of around him, he had several such sort of young composers who hung on his every word. I think that must have been one of them, or maybe his dog or something like that, because I've always just had this huge love for Schumann, the man as well as the composer and the writer. I love his letters. It's so beautiful. Yeah, it was a responsibility, but also a privilege. And, you know, like I'm used to playing his music. I play his music as much as I possibly can. It's the same thing, really. Communicating my love for him, his music, his words, the man, whatever, to audiences and readers. I wasn't scared by it exactly. I was quite excited by it. Because the more he gets read, the happier I am. And the more his music is listened to, the happier I am.
And were there any particular favorites that you have of his rules or advice to young musicians? Any that just really ring?
He has a gentle way of making sure people are not too conceited. He said, you know, if everybody wanted to play first violin, we would have no orchestra. I like that remark. I think it's great, and it's so true. But he obviously loved young people. He was a sensitive soul. So everything he says is very gentle. I mean, some of it sort of I find slightly scary. He sort of thinks you should be able to hear every score you read in your head. And I certainly can't. He's writing for much better musicians than I am. And he says you have to know every major work that's ever been written, which I found terrifying. And then I did think, well, he is writing, you know, 200 years, well, almost 150, between 150 and 200 years ago. You know, there have been many, many masterpieces since then. Maybe even he wouldn't know every piece. Yeah. But he also throws out challenges. I think that's great. And some of it sort of made me laugh a little bit, where he probably didn't mean that. Like he said, don't work too hard when you've worked enough, go and read a poem or walk in the forest. Thank God, I'll go and watch, you know, go and watch Arrested Development or something like that. More likely than read a poem or walk in the forest. But as I said, he's writing for a very aesthetic young person.
Yeah, no, I like that one jumped out for me as well. Now, at the end of the book, you added kind of your own pieces of advice as well. How hard was it to distill down, I'm sure, so many thoughts and ideas, but to really get the right ones to add to this little volume?
Thank you. Well, I think at one point I decided to have 88 paragraphs, I think, because there are 88 keys on a piano, and I just thought that's the sort of thing that Schumann would have liked. So then that gave me a sort of a limit. And then I just chose what I felt were the most important things I wanted to say to young musicians. Some of them I've already sort of dealt with a little bit on my Facebook page, where I write quite a lot of advice. But, you know, that was nice to have a limit. Mm-hmm. You can go on and on forever. It was like making up a program. You know, God, there's so many great pieces you can play. You just have to choose a few that somehow belong together. So I felt I could have rambled on and on, but I felt this was a good number, and I chose just I think, I can't remember how many my paragraphs there are, probably about 11 or something. And I could certainly think of 11 things I wanted to say that Truman hadn't said, because he probably wouldn't, because at that time they didn't come up.
You refer both in the book and then earlier in our conversation to just the lack of exposure that so many young people have to classical music today. What are young people missing out on because they're not getting that access to music and learning really how to perform and understand and just enjoy music?
Well, I think it's very sad when a young person is not given any chance to experience classical music. It's also very sad when they're sort of taught boringly, and that can happen. It can put them off, which is terrible. And it's up to us performers, it's up to teachers, everything. Our responsibility is to just be honest and play the music with a little sincerity and life, so that it comes to life, so it communicates to children, and, well, to everybody. But of course, for a child, I say, if you make friends with a great composer, they'll be your friend for life. They won't sort of go off you, or you won't have quarrels with them. They'll be there for you. And music is the best thing in all times. And when things are difficult, music is there for you. And that can so much help any child's life, I mean, or young musician, well, of course, anybody. But talking particularly of children, I think it's very useful. And also socially, it's so great. If you play music with other kids, it's a great way of learning to interact, and it's great in everywhere. There's a story I read about a school that was failing and then introduced music as a compulsory subject, and suddenly the school was doing brilliantly. That was a great story I just read the other day. Very satisfying, but true, because, you know, it's not just, of course it helps the brain of a child or a young person hugely to have that organization to learn a musical instrument. But also, as I say, socially, it's a great thing, playing chamber music. The dialogue, the give and take, the sense of a shared goal. It's all good, really. And what slightly upsets me is when I see sort of films or plays or whatever, where the child is supposed to study boring classical music, and then suddenly they find themselves by playing jazz or pop or whatever. They should find themselves by playing classical music as well as playing jazz and pop. I mean, one can absolutely express everything in classical music, even if you haven't written the piece yourself. I mean, you know, actors aren't necessarily asked to write plays. You are in touch with something beyond yourself if you're playing Bach, Beethoven, Schumann, whatever. You just can't. I certainly can't ask for more. I feel completely fulfilled through that, and I think anybody can.
Well, in today's environment, which, as you know, that is very different in many ways from the context in which Schumann had originally written his advice, are there any particular elements of his advice that are that would be particularly challenging to young musicians who have grown up in a different atmosphere, and any others that you think are even more so relevant today?
Well, as I said, that sort of, you know, hearing scores in your head, and you know, the general sense he has that he's talking to a person, a young person who's going completely to dedicate themselves to music. You know, that's going to be their life. They're going to be obsessed with it. You don't need that. You can have a normal childhood and still be a great musician. So I think that's changed a little bit. I think we're living in a very different society now, but there's still great musicians emerging, great composers and so on. In some ways, of course, today, because of recordings and everything, we have, it's much easier for young musicians than it was for Schumann's young musicians. I mean, if they missed a concert, then that was it. They wouldn't hear that piece again. They wouldn't hear that performer. Here we can have constant stimulation with it. But of course, that's good and bad. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't give up the recordings of the great players of the past. I'm very happy we have them now. So, yeah, in a way, we're better off than Schumann's young musicians were. But it's just a question of concentration, not being too distracted. But on the other hand, being a musician does not mean to say you don't have any fun. You should have as much fun as anybody.
And actually, that reminds me of one of the pieces of advice which you expanded on was to be careful if there's a piece you're working on, not to rely too much on other people's performances, even your own personal heroes. How much of a challenge is that for today's musicians that we do have so much, not just audio recordings, we have the YouTube videos to watch technique. How does that change the game?
It's tricky, that. I mean, it's a very gray area, because I think any child who takes up classical music will be inspired, as I certainly was inspired by, Kazal and Rostropovich and great cellists, and then, of course, I listened to other great pianists and violinists and things, and singers. And that is inspiring, and that's great. You need that inspiration. You need that excitement. But once you're actually studying a piece closely, my advice is not to listen to anybody else's performance, just to go straight to the score, so it's the composer talking to you rather than an intermediary. And as I've often said, you have the chance to talk to God. Why get your message from a vicar? So one can't be too extreme about that. Mm. I had the chance to hear, say, Pablo Casals play a piece. He came back to life and was going to give a concert playing a piece I was playing. I would certainly go and listen to it.
Right.
Again, one just has to be sensible.
Have you received much feedback since the book was published?
Yeah, I mean, not. It hasn't quite outsold Harry Potter. I think it's still vying for supremacy. But yeah, I've had very nice feedback. Probably not as much as I had from the children's books, which I wrote, which done very well because there weren't many around. I think there are more children than young musicians. But no, it's been nice, the feedback. And they're coming out now in some Far Eastern countries, where all concerts, you talk about people not having enough exposure to classical music. I think they don't in America or in Britain or whatever. But boy, in the Far East, if you give a concert, it is packed with young people. Mm. It's wonderful. And it's a very different scene over there. So I'm looking forward to it coming out in Korean and Japanese and things. I think it's coming out in Japanese, but in Korea. When I next go there, hopefully, people will have the copies, and as they have had of my children's book. And that's very nice. You feel that you've done a little bit for these young people, and that's a great feeling.
Right. And for maybe our listeners who aren't familiar with them, tell us a little bit about the two children's books that you have already come out with.
The first one is called Why Beethoven Threw the Stew, and the second one was called Why Handel Waggled His Wig. And they've never really come out in America. I mean, you can get them, but they never really come out. I think they were originally rejected by some American publishers because they thought they were too humorous and they should be more serious, but that's the difference between British publishers and American ones. I can't help it. I was brought up in the country that produced Monty Python and P.G. Wodehouse. It rubs off. Yeah, they were just really written for my son, or at least that was the original sort of impulse. My son was getting to a certain age and he was getting interested in composers, and I wanted to read to him about them, but I couldn't find a book that was accurate and fun, or fun and accurate. Either they were one or the other. They were fantasies, or they were slightly dry. And there weren't many of them anyway. So I decided to try and write, because I've always loved writing. I decided to try and write one for him. And then Faber Books took it up, the first one, and they commissioned the second one, which my son refused to read for 6 months after it came out. But he did eventually, and criticized a couple of things. That's what teenage boys do. He's now 27. But that was why I wrote children's books, and then it became a great fun thing, and I started giving children's concerts. I had my children's series for a bit in New York at the 92nd Street Y, and I love playing for children. I especially love the questions they ask.
Right.
It can be so funny. It's not a book of practical advice. It doesn't tell you how to hold a bow or whatever. That's not what it's about. It's about what our goals should be as musicians, what we should be aiming for, what we should be enjoying, what we should be avoiding some of the pitfalls. And yeah, Schumann was very gentle at steering his young musicians. I think he was probably a lovely father to his children because he was so gentle. And you get that feeling both through Album for the Young, the pieces, the piano pieces, and through this book. And I'm probably a little less gentle and a little more sarcastic, but there we are. We can't all be saints like Schumann, but I do want to help young musicians, and I do want to make sure that young musicians grow up idealistic, because I think for a long time there was a real sort of not a positive direction being sort of propagated in musical education. I think people were taught to think a lot about success and career and making a loud noise and getting lots of applause. And now I think, of course, there's still that danger, but I think somehow the tide is turning a bit. I think young musicians today do tend to be more interested in chamber music. They're more idealistic, maybe. They're getting back, perhaps, towards Schumann's era. I do think that things are hopeful, and I'd like to keep nudging in that direction, because, you know, why be a musician if you're not idealistic? You know, if you're really materialistic, you might as well go and start a hedge fund or something. Music is something magical, and it's a privilege for those of us who are allowed to devote our lives to music. And this book also is not just for musicians, it's also for music lovers who are interested in knowing how musicians work, what they think about. So I was also conscious when I was writing it that I wanted to talk to them as well and give them some sort of glimpse behind the scenes about how interpretations are different and what our ideals are, what our thoughts are. But I hope it's an enjoyable book. I also wanted it to be entertaining and not too long, so you can sort of dip in and out of it. In that way, it's like my children's books. I knew children wouldn't read them cover to cover, most children. So I gave them sort of paragraphs, bite-sized, to read just before they go to sleep or whatever. I think that's quite a nice way to read a book.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That was cellist Stephen Israelis, whose revisited version of Robert Schumann's Advice to Young Musicians was recently published in the U.S. by University of Chicago Press. You can find his website at stevenisraelis.com, and that's spelled STEVENISSERLIS.com. And I thought I would leave you with just one last gem from Schumann that I'm sure we can all relate to. If your music comes from your heart and soul, and if you feel it inside yourself, it will affect others in the same way. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you on A Tempo each week, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. Remember, though, that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.